and back for Mike and Mike Off Air Podcast number 23. Mike O'Neill right here, and you over there.
Mike Pesta. I'm just trying to think about 23. I mean, that number, oh, Mike, I know that number means something to me. Michael Jordan. That was his number. Until he went to the Wizards after he retired from basketball and played for them. I think he was 45. Actually, no. When he came back to the Bulls, he was number 45 because, weird story, they retired his number as a Chicago Bull for obvious reasons. Best basketball player ever. So they retired his number. He could not get his own number back originally. It took a little while for them to unretire his number and say, yes, granted, we retired it for you, but you can go ahead and have it again.
I'll take irony for 200, Alex. That's wild, man.
That was not my official hijack, by the way. But before you get rolling, I know we've got these Madonna tickets that we're getting everyone qualified for the next few weeks or so. And depending on when you win this or when you listen to this podcast, congratulations to whoever won. But there's a poll question that's also up online right now just asking how recently have you gone to your most recent concert? Because I know quite a few people took concerts off because they weren't going on during the pandemic, and some have been a little slow to get back into the whole concert thing or maybe thinking, well, it's really not my thing anymore. So when was the last concert you went to? Who and where?
That's easy, actually. My last concert, official concert at a venue was the Paul Paul Theater. It was about a year ago.
Okay.
Or whenever the heck. Phil Wickham was at the Paul Paul Theater for the fair.
Oh, okay.
It was so good. It was like being at a worship service outside, and he's just really remarkable. Phil comes from actually being the head of the church he grew up in San Diego's worship group, and he just kind of rolled forward, kind of like Casting Crowns in their world.
Gotcha.
Very, very similar there. And so that's what his concerts are like, and I just adored it. It was great. I also love, you know, classic rock. I've seen we saw the British version of the Pink Floyd, Brit Floyd.
Okay. You've raved about them.
Dude, they are so good. It's stupid. I mean, that's a band that's so good at what they do that you almost don't need to see the original if you see them. They're that close. And Styx, I've seen them a couple times in the past few years. Kansas, yeah, we saw them. In fact, they did a twofer, one down in Bakersfield and one up here. And I think that's about it. I think we took Shaughnessy Luke Combs a year or so ago.
Okay.
That's about it. So yes, obviously music's very important to me as well.
As I was asking you, I'm looking on my phone to try to see if I know I have pictures, but I can't find the year it was. It was either 2 years ago or 3 years ago, seeing Green Day, Weezer, and Fall Out Boy when they had their big world tour going on at Dodger Stadium.
And all you talked about the 7 days before, and I mean that in a good way, but I was just so excited for how excited you were for going to get to see it.
I learned something, though, from a friend of mine. Whenever there's a big stadium tour like that, you want to do one of two things. Either get tickets the week they go on sale so you get the best, you know, the pick of the litter, or wait till 2 or 3 days before the concert, because with that particular show, it was just as things were getting back into the groove after the pandemic. So it didn't sell as well as they were hoping it would. If I would have just waited, I could have gotten my tickets right where they were or even better seats at a much lower price because they discounted a bunch of tickets right towards the end of the show or the end of the run.
Well, you know, there's something a lot like that too. When I took my daughter, this will date me for sure, back when Miley Cyrus came out with the when she was no longer Hannah and she was she was un-Hannah-ing and she came to Fresno. Man, we knew these tickets were going to go on sale and sell out in 14 seconds. And the morning guy here then, we both went on the second we could go on, and we were both skunked out. We didn't even get close. Didn't even get close. Well, as it comes, working in radio in the South Valley has its benefits. And this particular morning guy knew somebody that worked at the Save Mart Center. And we found out that production seats were going to be released for this show.
Yep, yep.
Production seats, for those that don't know, are they tell you, we need this many feet, this much depth for the stage, and this much for the runner up the middle, and then you put seats everywhere else. And so then the venue puts the seats down, and they bring in the stage, and then you realize, oh, we can put five more rows in. And then they do, and then they sell them. Well, this morning guy and I both got production seats for Miley.
Wow.
We were sitting way closer than we had any right to be.
Those happen, and what also happens is they'll reserve seats a lot of times for the artist, maybe members of the group, band, whatever it happens to be, especially if it's an area where they think friends and family will come. Well, if it's a tour that has maybe five or six dates, maybe like a Garth Brooks or Eagles or something like that, maybe they all go to one day, but they don't to another. And they'll free those up the last two or three days before the show as well. So when I worked at, you remember Tower Records when that was still around?
Lived in the Buena Park Tower Records, man.
When I was going to San Francisco State, the mall that's right near there had a Tower Records. It's a movie theater there now. And I worked there, and I learned the trick of, if you really want to go, go to the ticket booth, and the last week or so, check every single day, check multiple times a day. So I can't help you out much right now, but if it really matters, you go to Ticketmaster on a regular basis the last 3 or 4 days before the show, and you'll be surprised what pops up.
So you said you actually worked at Tower Records?
Yeah.
I'm a little jealous. Back when I was in high school, I would have thought I was just as cool as I could be if I worked at Tower Records. I loved that store.
That was one of the last jobs I had before I really got into radio in San Francisco, and then here in Visalia now.
Well, Hijack Breath, isn't that ironic that you said that?
Why?
Because my question for you this morning is, if you weren't in radio, what would you be doing?
Oh, that's easy.
Oh, yeah?
That's easy. Going back to as far back as I can remember, once I realized I had to have a job, I honestly thought radio would be it. I wanted it to be it. Before that, I wanted to be an actor.
Really? That's not surprising because you've taken that on.
And I've kind of I've gotten back into it again with Visalia Players at the Ice House. I've done a few productions over there. I'm taking a little brief hiatus for the time being. But
You even got to direct.
Yeah. But before the end of the year, I want to get back into it. They've got, by the way, a little teaser for anyone who's interested in Hunchback of Notre Dame. Huh. Not the Disney version, but a much darker. If you remember Sweeney Todd when it was at the Ice House, same director, Kelly Ventura, has taken this on as well. It's also going to have some very dark overtones and undertones. And I am part of the group that's kind of bringing that to life behind the scenes, kind of working on some things. And auditions are coming up soon. So get to the Visalia Players at the Ice House Facebook page for all the details on that. But hopefully I'll get on stage again before the end of the year. But yeah, that's something I hope to do. I've got a friend of mine who is a director in Hollywood, Kellen Gibbs. Remember that name. And remember the movie Tomorrow. He directed it a few years ago, and my entire family was in it. I actually got a check. I got a check for being in the movie because I had lines, which you don't actually see me as I'm saying those lines, but you hear me. And because I spoke in a movie, that's one of the rules, you have to be paid. So I was, and I still have that check, and I'm never going to cash. It's like $250. It's nothing.
That was not the point at any point.
It was, I actually got paid to do something I love to do. And by definition, that makes me a professional. So
absolutely,
I am a professional actor because I got paid once. Again, the name of the movie is Tomorrow. At some point, the hope is it's going to get on Netflix. If it does, believe me, listen to the station. I won't get paid again, but I will talk about it ad nauseum because I will want you to check it out on Netflix. But what's funny is my son was a featured extra in it. He's actually on camera quite prominently in the very beginning of the movie. You see a full frontal shot of him, but he doesn't say anything, so he didn't get paid. But he gets more camera time than I did.
Something that just struck me, talk about the definition of irony. You wanted to be an actor, but then you're on the radio.
Yeah.
And you got in a movie, but we don't see your face, but we hear you.
I
it's like, boy,
that.
You're heading right down the same tunnel, aren't you? That's wild.
So that's the first thing that comes to mind. I'm sure that there are others, but what comes to mind for you?
Well, I studied for business, but I knew that I was going to be doing no business. I was not going to be anybody's accountant or any of the things that I was studying. I thought I was going to be a musician, and then I realized, well, you kind of suck. So that won't be happening. I play guitar well enough to entertain myself in the living room.
Okay.
No albums will be purchased.
Now, there's YouTube video, though, of you playing guitar, isn't there?
Oh, yes.
You want to talk about that?
We were in a back. I programmed, directed a rock station back in the day on the coast, KRQK, and we, literally the four of us, and one of the guys is still around, and actually our drummer was the son of one of the most legendary percussionists you've ever heard of. Don Elias Jr. was my friend and played drums for us. Don Elias Sr. was the percussionist for Weather Report. And you can see him. He's scary good. But I played with guys way better than me. But we all worked for the radio station. And we decided to do this because we brought a big rock act to the Flower Festival. It's about the same size as the Porterville Fair over in Lompoc.
Okay.
And we wanted to open for them. I was the program director. I got to make the decision. We did. And we actually were pretty bloody good for the show. We played seven or eight songs. They uh-huh. sounded great. We did a good job. It was a thrill. And yes, Cocaine by Eric Clapton and Rockin' in the Free World, which we opened with,
okay,
is out there somewhere still. I have the whole video still.
Now,
nobody watches it but me.
If I were to go on there and search it out and find it, would I recognize you?
Holy God, no. Hair, purple cellophane, slash perm,
uh-huh.
hair down to my shoulders, farther in front, down about right on my chest in front and on the back. And, you also would notice that I was much thinner, but that's has more to do with being...
No, that wasn't a wig, a performance wig. That was your actual hair.
That was my hair back in the day. And I, back then, if you were at a rock station and... Yeah, I was wearing my leather jacket. My motorcycle was my primary mode of transportation back then. So I was, those, what do you call it? They weren't tie-dyed. What were they called? They're acid wash jeans.
Okay.
Into cowboy boots with those belt boots, kind of fashion, uh-huh. a la the Appetite for Destruction album, basically.
Gotcha.
And that's what we looked like.
Jeez.
That's what we sounded like. Pretty crazy, right? What I would actually probably have ended up doing, though, my first year of college, I studied to be a priest for a year.
Okay.
And I found out almost immediately that that particular lifestyle wasn't for me, but I still love God. I love the pursuit of faith. I love the education within it. And I feel like... If I hadn't, I would be working for the church in some way.
Okay.
Some way. Because I still spend a lot of time there.
Now, can you see yourself being one of the lead pastors where you're actually on stage doing the talk every single week or behind the scenes more?
I don't think I'm a lead pastor because management has never been my specialty per se.
Uh-huh.
I believe I could write and resonate a good message to people that would understand it and go, yeah. I think I could do that, but a pastor is a very special person.
Uh-huh.
A good pastor, that's the least of his duties, is
standing
up there
on
Sundays, being able to make sure everybody else doesn't kill each other and get along and lead an effort. And our pastor at our church is fabulous that way. But I think I could. I think that's where I would have done. That would have been me. Next question. If you could start a side hustle within what you're doing now to make more money, what would that be?
Well, I've done that already. Maybe not know this, but when we first moved here to the South Valley, my wife had the hardest time finding a job and find one, and then it would dissipate. They're just not enough. She works in the dental field. So they just didn't have enough patients to support her being on staff, so they'd have to let her go. And there was one time when that happened. And it's like, okay, I got to step up and do a little bit more. So thank goodness at that point I had met Keith Korsgaden with Crawdaddies. And I reached out to him and I just said, hey, kind of need a little something. Do you know of any of the restaurants there? Because I was a server back when I was – first getting into working for a living. One of the first jobs that I had when I was actually was the first job I ever had. I was working at a pizza restaurant, making the pizzas and then serving them. So I figured I could do this. I said, well, I don't know of anyone else, but I could use you.
Wow.
And I know your work ethic. And so, yeah.
And you were actually, for whatever it's worth, you were really good at it.
Thank you.
I would expect you to be in terms of your personality. Mm-hmm. That part is easy for you because you treat people really, really well. But one thing I was wondering about a waiter.
Yeah.
One reason I don't think I could be very good at it, how do you remember everybody's order?
I got to write it down.
Do you guys do like magic shorthand or something?
And if you've been to Crawdaddy's, especially once the band starts playing at about 7 so, you're barely hearing what they're saying. Yeah. Now, Dora, who was the lead server upstairs, she may still be there. I'm not sure. It's been a while since I've been there. Her thing was she almost insisted that we not write things down.
Really?
Well, that worked for upstairs, but downstairs, like I said, it was a different animal. So I would constantly write stuff down. And some things I could commit to memory, other things I couldn't, and I just learned over time what things I had to jot down. Little shorthand, little tricks I learned as well, so you can do it quickly and then immediately get over and put it into the system so the chefs could start working on it.
Because I laughed. I laughed one day because my wife and I are two different people. Sebastian Maniscalco does a great comedy routine about the difference between the way he orders at a restaurant and his wife orders. Uh-huh. And I thought, oh my God, that's Colleen and I. I get there, you know, see, first thing Colleen says is, oh, you go first. And my first thought is, really? T-bone steak,
uh-huh.
Baked potatoes, broccoli. You're up again.
Yeah.
What did that save you? Nothing. And I mean, because when we first came in, she's not looking at the menu. She's looking at the art on the wall.
Yeah,
she's commenting on the carpet on the floor.
The ambiance.
They're gonna need information here soon. Anyway, I thought that was funny. But so for me, you know, like I said, for me, I tell the lady four words. Colleen is like, okay, I would like the barbecue chicken, but put the barbecue sauce on the side if you would, okay?
Okay.
Is that okay? Can we do that?
Great. This reminds me of when Harry met Sally.
Well, it takes forever. I mean, there's way more coming. I'm not going to go through the whole order, but I can see me standing there and be like, I don't even know what I wrote. How would I tell the chef what she wants? Because, you know, I'm like I said before, hamburger, well done, fries.
Next.
Go.
Yeah.
You know.
Thankfully, maybe it was just lucky or maybe just so many people liked what was on the menu at Crawdaddy's that very rarely would I get, okay, I want this, but do it with that sort of thing. But we always accommodated. So, I mean, it did happen. I'm sure it must have. I just don't recall any issues I ever had with it happening.
Well, I ended up having to get a side gig as well because, well, we wanted to buy a house. Mm-hmm. And those are very expensive, turns mm-hmm. out. And I ended up, as you well know, all of our listeners on my don't know this because I'm not even really doing it anymore. But for years and years, almost two decades, I was a mobile DJ, a wedding DJ in the South Valley. I worked those days, during those years, I worked an average of 60 to 70 hours a week doing wedding meetings for brides on the side mm-hmm. and an average of 50 to 60 weddings a year.
That's a lot.
At roughly about $800 a wedding. So it made good money. I wasn't home very much. It cost me things I didn't get to see for my kids. And I made so many friends in the wedding business, and I was grateful for it being there and for the equity that it accrued. But I could never do that again. I could never, ever, ever do that again. I liked the work, but that I worked way too hard. That was just way, way, way too much.
Yeah, well, imagine with that, it's a lot of the prep ahead of time.
Oh.
And making sure you have the phonetic spelling of everybody's name you're going to have to say.
You would laugh at my planners. First of all, I'm blind. It's all 16-point font.
Uh-huh.
So it's four pages, not one page. And yeah, exactly right. I would have O'Neill, you know, capital small. And just have it spelled out 100% phonetically. My brides was always freaked out. My mom sees that spell. She's not going to see it. It's for me.
Yeah.
I will say her name right, and she'll look at me like, oh, you got it right. You have no idea. You're going to get so many good points here because I used 48 A's in the letter. But just trust me on that. It's going to work out. Yeah, that is exactly it. And getting people trying so hard to persuade them from some of their quote-unquote great ideas. Like one groom who thought it would be so funny. So funny indeed at the Garter for me to play She's My Cherry Pie. And he wouldn't let it go. And Michael, I had to do that at that event.
Uh-huh.
And the way I did it was fairly smart. I did it and pointed right at the groom as I was doing it, as if to say, not my monkey, not my circus. This was his idea. And I'm looking at the mother of the bride. She's looking at me like, really? And I'm just, dude. And trust me, this wasn't my idea. And I had a bride. A bride. What is the, oh gosh, I can't think of her name now. Carrie Underwood. What's the crazy funny song that she has about smacking, you know, four-wheel drive?
Da-da-da-da. Oh, man, you got to put me on the spot now.
Well, anyway.
That one.
Basically, she wanted me to play the hook to that song for her maid of honor
uh-huh.
when she walked in. Basically calling her, basically the part of the song basically called her maid of honor a hooker. And I knew that that's exactly how it was going to come off.
Uh-huh.
And it did.
Uh-huh.
And everybody looked at me.
I pointed at her.
And she, and God bless her, she was honest. She was like, yeah, it didn't work out. You have to try to steer them away from some of these crazy ideas.
I would imagine, though, more and more, as I'm hearing of weddings and seeing videos of weddings, more of those things, I hesitate to use the word acceptable, but they're done more and more. So I guess they are becoming more and more acceptable. It's less traditional and more, hey, like the big thing for a while there was, and I don't know if it still is at this point, is everyone, all the groomsmen and the bridesmaids coming in and having their own song, first of all, and then doing a big choreographed bit as well at some point.
I didn't see the choreographed bit a lot, but I've done – one of the reasons I was very popular at what I did is I did all of what you just said.
Okay.
I had 14 people in the wedding party. I had a hook for each one of them, and it was well edited, and it was perfect, and I engineered it like a boss, and it was just fun. And by the time I got to you and Seska, my voice was way up here, and I sounded like a fight announcer. You know, Michael and Seska, bad!
Okay.
And my voice kind of sails back down again. And the groom would always turn to me, that was awesome! Because I carried him along with me, and it worked. And then it's just pretty basic the rest of the night. You know, the most important thing I did as a mobile DJ was just keep the night on track.
Mm-hmm.
Weddings go awry very quickly. And the trick is beating the night to attrition.
Okay.
Keeping it moving before the older people start to leave. Getting through all the things you have to do so there'll be dance time. If you just let it happen organically, by the time you get finished with everything, everybody's gone. And then there is no dance, and they're very disappointed. I was very good at pushing them through without making them crazy and getting to a legitimate 2 or 3 hours of dance time. And that's the thing I think I did best.
I know we probably just have a couple minutes left, but one thing I think you and I know you've done more of, but something, since we're talking about side hustles, something else that I definitely want to get more into is voiceover work and things of that nature. I mean, I've got a pseudo studio at home. I've got a pretty good microphone. When I was out on COVID, and you did the same thing.
I do.
I had to do the show from home. So I went to Target. Well, actually, I had my wife go to Target because I couldn't go anywhere. Because when I got COVID the first time, it was before the vaccine was even available.
We were sick.
And my son and I both had it at the same time. So we were cordoned off upstairs.
Yep.
And my wife and my daughter were downstairs, and food would come up every once in a while. But the little studio that I have is in our guest room, which, thank goodness, was also upstairs. So I've got the microphone. I've got all the stuff there. It's soundproofed enough that it sounds good enough to do like commercial work and things like that. So I'm hoping at some point to segue into that. I know you've done some of that as well.
I have. I've did a lot of actually, I did a lot of commercial work outside of here. I had an agent in Bakersfield for a while, and the guys here knew that I was doing it, and so I was on the Bakersfield Mercedes-Benz dealership spots for a long time, and some stuff down there for that particular agency, and I did most of it right off my right off the studio at home.
Yeah, it's amazing what you can do and how you can sound if it's the right microphone, the right processor, the right tweaking here and there after the fact. And yeah.
Software and plugins. I have it all at home. And I've had it for a long time. I actually, if you looked, you'd laugh at me because it's set up very, very – our engineer's name is Paul. It's set up very Paul style. If you were standing here with me and Mike, you'd see two speakers standing on these poles that are screwed into the cabinet. And that's exactly what I did at home. I've got my two little JBLs screwed to these things, sitting up there, my keyboard in the middle, the microphone. And you know what my mic stand is? You're going to laugh at this. I actually have the original mic stand that was the K-Jug mic stand for the station when it was on Mooney.
Okay.
That's my mic stand.
Wow.
Paul said, I'm getting rid of this. You want it? Yes, I do.
I'll take it.
For 100 reasons. First of all, I don't have to pay $100. And second of all, how cool is this?
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, my studio is pretty good. But I don't really do a lot of VO because I do plenty here. And it doesn't pay superbly here.
Uh-huh.
You really have to sort of make it, if you were. But you'd have to do that with anything, really, don't you?
Yeah, more and more.
Yeah, because it's like $50 a holler.
Okay.
And that's could be a lot of work. It could take a lot of time. Everybody has to be quiet at home. And no, I want to turn the blender on. No, I'm doing a commercial. And all that sorts of things. Well, that's about it for me, mister.
All right.
I think you are up next.
Yes, I will be. We'll be at number 24.